Welcome to Mic Check, WPKN's weekly program, which focuses on global, national, and regional issues and their impact on our local communities. My name is Richard Hill, and each Sunday, one of a rotating roster of hosts focuses on a different issue. And this week, we are going to focus on fracking waste, and a bill at the statewide level, which is now being considered, that would ban fracking waste statewide. And to do that, we are welcoming our special guest today, Jennifer Siskind, who is the Connecticut Coordinator for Food and Water Watch, which is a national organization. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rich. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Well, you're here to talk about a bill which is at some level of consideration in the state Senate. It is SB 753, an act concerning the statewide ban on fracking waste, which had a public hearing on February 4th. Jen, what are some of the key features of this bill, and what do you think would be the critical reason why this bill is needed at this time?
Well, we actually have a state law right now that is a temporary moratorium that requires future regulations, and we're trying to stop that. Regulations are just rules for how to write permits to bring this waste into Connecticut, and we don't want that to happen. And also this temporary moratorium that was passed back in 2014, it only bans some wastes from one type of gas well, a gas well that is hydraulically fractured. But there are many other types of wells, there are many other types of wastes, and none of the waste from those other wells are banned. Gas wells that do not have the hydraulic fracturing process, and also any type of oil well. None of the waste coming out of these wells is banned. And the problem is drilling and extraction in nearby states is producing billions of gallons of liquid wastes a year, hundreds of thousands of tons of solid wastes. And it's very toxic. It can also be radioactive, and it's causing extreme damage in nearby states. And we want to make sure that it doesn't contaminate Connecticut. It doesn't drive up the costs of towns to remediate where damage has occurred. We don't want it impacting any of our waterways or the Long Island Sound or any of the fish or shellfish that we harvest out of these areas. And we don't want it impacting public health at all.
Would SB 753 actually completely ban fracking waste? And actually, where did the bill originate from? Was this from a specific senator or group of representatives who promoted this particular bill?
Yes. Actually, when I say fracking waste, just to clarify to your listeners, I'm saying fracking waste, but I am really meaning all oil and gas drilling and extraction waste. Fracking is just one method of getting oil and gas extracted out of the ground. So just for the ease of, you know, using one word, fracking, that's what I'm going to refer to. But this waste, there was excellent language that has already been passed by seven county legislatures in New York State, right next door. And what we did is we borrowed that language, and we have been passing it as local laws ever since 2015. And to date, there are 56 cities and towns that have passed this language banning all of this waste from coming into their communities, including the city of Bridgeport, where you're located. And so what this bill would do is now offer protection for all 169 towns in Connecticut. And towns can continue to have their local laws. There's no reason for it to conflict with the state ban if SB 753 passes. There were actually 11 legislators that submitted bills to the Assembly this year, six different bills that had to do with fracking waste, hydraulic fracturing waste, extraction waste. And the Environment Committee took the very best language, and they raised it up to having a public hearing, which happened a week ago. And now the next step is for them to pass this onto the Senate, where it will go on the Senate calendar, and then it needs to be called and debated and passed through the Senate.
Jennifer Siskind, would you say a word, actually, about this amazing campaign that started, as you said, in 2015, a grassroots campaign that you were really spearheading? You came to our town in Branford and got the campaign rolling there. But talk about how this campaign started and how it really gathered so much momentum in the state to the point where it's almost more than a third of the town's municipalities in Connecticut are banning fracking waste and these other byproducts, making it almost de facto that the state is going to have difficulty finding a place to locate this stuff if it was allowed in. But talk a little bit about the campaign and just the way citizens have responded and taken action on this.
Well, it's really been tremendous, and it has been a grassroots, bottom-up effort. And what happened is back in 2012 and 2013, some really good, responsible legislators were introducing language to ban fracking waste in Connecticut. And unfortunately, the bills kind of died or got killed in committee. And then finally, in 2014, a temporary moratorium was passed. It only bans waste from gas wells that are hydraulically fractured, as I mentioned, and it also requires in the future for the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection to write regulations. And when that passed in 2014, every major environmental group that you can think of in Connecticut was working to try to get a ban. And unfortunately, the language got compromised, and we got what was passed instead. And at that point in time, Food and Water Watch kicked into high gear, and we decided we were not going to wait until the ink was almost dry on the paper, that we were going to continue to educate residents across Connecticut and local legislators about what this waste is, what the loopholes are currently in state law, and why it's such a risk for their towns. You know, we're talking about naturally occurring radioactive material, particularly radium, which has a 1,600-year half-life and takes about 4,000 years to decay finally into lead. It's radium we know causes breast cancer, bone cancer, liver cancer, and is associated with childhood and adult leukemia. And considering that we're moving into Breast Cancer Awareness Month, we really need to keep in mind that we need to keep our environment clean, protect public health, and keep waste that can impact our communities and our families' health out of this state. So we've been talking with people. We've been giving PowerPoint presentations and meeting with local legislators, and all sorts of citizens have stepped up and said that they want to get involved. We've had conservation commissions in towns, energy task forces, faith communities. There are five religious Catholic sister groups, nuns, in Connecticut. They've been helping to pass in their own towns. Congregational church groups, the synagogue in my town got involved. It's just absolutely blossomed. Nobody wants their town to be permanently damaged by this highly toxic waste, and they want to keep it out. And it's not just where it could possibly be sent to be treated. Bridgeport is home to a privately owned hazardous waste treatment facility, so if regulations were completed in the future, that facility could potentially apply for a permit, and then as they're processing it, if they're not able to remove all of the chemicals and all of the radioactive material, when they dump it into the sewage system and it flows through Bridgeport sewage system, you've got serious damage that can happen. And then it ultimately ends up in the Long Island Sound, where it never goes away. The radioactivity will remain for 4,000 years until it turns into waste. But it's not just towns that have hazardous waste treatment facilities. Unfortunately, what's happening in other states is they're getting permits, or the local regulatory, the state regulatory authorities are giving people permits to process this waste. and turn it into some other kind of product that can be used. And, you know, a typical example is all the solid material that gets drilled out of the ground, that's called drill cuttings, and that can be added to construction fill, or it can be added to material that you use to cap the ground when you're remediating a brownfield. And unfortunately, there have been problems using this material. Pennsylvania has actually rescinded all their previously given out permits to use this waste in construction fill and in brownfield remediation sites because it's been found to be completely unstable and you can't build a factory building on top of it. And if you're using it underneath roads, your roads could start slipping and cracking and needing, premature repairs. And then other waste that comes out of oil and gas wells is liquid waste. And, you know, there is a lot of liquid waste that returns to the surface after you hydraulically fracture an oil or a gas well. But then the entire time that that well is producing oil or gas, a naturally occurring brine that exists in the ground, trapped in between layers of rock, that literally is seawater from 350 million years ago that's still a mile or two deep in the ground, that is coming to the surface. And this brine has been sitting there for hundreds of millions of years, literally stewing next to uranium and radium deposits, radioactive deposits in the ground. So when this brine comes to the surface, it can have very high levels of radioactivity in it. You know, the safe level for drinking water, according to the EPA, is 5 picocuries per liter. And wells have tested at thousands, 10,000s, up to, you know, over 26,000 picocuries per liter. And unfortunately, this brine is being allowed to be processed in other states. And then because it's very salty seawater, 8 times saltier than what's currently in the Long Island Sound, it is effective as a road de-icer, but unfortunately, it's contaminating roads as well. And this has been clearly determined by scientific studies done by Penn State University. And also the Ohio Department of Natural Resources confirmed that what they had permitted to allow to be used on roads tested at very high radium content. And in Ohio, one company was bottling it and selling it on the hardware stores shelves, and Lowe's Hardware was selling it to people online, and it tested to be highly radioactive. And so we know the problems that are occurring in other states, and we're saying no fracking way. You're not going to bring it into Connecticut and cause all these problems with our state and all these costs on our towns to clean up the problem after contamination occurs.
We're speaking with Jennifer Siskin. She's Food and Water Watch's Connecticut coordinator, and she's spearheading a campaign to pass Senate Bill 753, which is an act concerning a statewide ban on fracking waste in Connecticut, which would completely ban fracking waste and all other oil and gas harvesting byproducts. Jennifer, are there other competing bills that are vying for support and possible passage that could supplant or block this SB 753?
Well, we're not focusing on competing bills. You know, there were 6 bills filed concerning hydraulic fracturing waste, but what we're focusing on, the best language that has already been raised by the Environment Committee. And we're asking people across the state to be contacting their senator that serves their town. We're not talking about your senator that works in Washington, D.C. We're not talking about Senator Murphy or Senator Blumenthal. We're talking about your local state senator that works up at the legislative office building next to the Capitol in Hartford. That's the person that you need to be contacting now and saying, I don't want fracking waste or any oil or gas drilling waste to come into Connecticut. I want you to pass Senate Bill 753, and I want you to do it quickly. I don't want you to drag your feet until the end of the legislative session and do it then. We need to have it done now because it needs to go from the Senate back to the House and then back to the Senate and then finally signed by Governor Lamont. So to contact your state senator, I have two phone numbers. They're both 800 numbers. They both start with 842. And if you have a Democratic senator serving your town, you can reach them at 842-1420. If you have a Republican senator in your town, you can reach that senator at 842-1421.
Thank you for that information. That's very useful. We should repeat it before we conclude this interview. But can you just give some idea? You've laid out, I think, pretty concrete idea of why fracking waste and other byproducts of oil and gas production might be used by industry or commercial interests and become profitable in that way. But what might be the incentive for the state to allow this into the state? Department of Energy and Environmental Protection is tasked with approving of any bill that is crafted by the legislature after this three-year period. Why would DEEP even consider allowing fracking waste into the state?
You know, that is really the million-dollar question. Back in 2014, we had a newly installed commissioner of DEEP, and before he knew anything about fracking waste, he showed up at a public hearing and said, you know, we should regulate this waste. Other states are doing it. You know, I've got colleagues that work in other states, and they're regulating it, and we can write rules, too, and, you know, we can make sure that ours are, you know, similar to what California or Illinois or Colorado have because they've got good rules. Well, unfortunately, all of those states are having serious contamination issues, and people are having, or at least Colorado and California that has moved forward with fracking extensively, are having serious contamination issues. And so, unfortunately, his opinion held the attention of legislators, and that's what moved forward. Now, they were supposed to be researching for the past 3 years to determine how they would write these regulations. And I think one of the things that they did not take into consideration initially was the serious radioactive contamination issue. It's very hard to treat and filter out radioactive material from liquid waste as it goes through a, you know, wastewater treatment facility. And it's virtually impossible to remove it from where it's all been ground up together in drill cuttings and added to construction fill. So unfortunately, when other bills in the past couple of years have moved forward, DEEP did not step up to the plate and correct their original mistake that we see. They stayed silent in 2017 when there was another bill. They also stayed silent in 2018. And, you know, we're hoping with this new administration and a new commissioner, Commissioner Dykes of DEEP, and a new governor, that they will fully understand the issues. We've laid out the issues very clearly in testimony, and it's been sent to Commissioner Dykes. Governor Lamont, when he was running his campaign, he publicly told a room of hundreds of people at Trinity College that he does not want to see fracking waste come into Connecticut. So we hope that he will keep that campaign promise, and we hope that the legislature will move forward on this bill. But in order for that to happen, we need your listeners to call their senator, and they need to do that, you know, starting tomorrow morning. They can call their Republican senator by calling 1-800-842-1421, or they can call their Democratic senator by calling 1-800-842-1420. And they just have a very clear message. I don't want any fracking waste coming into our state. I'd like you to show that you're a champion and co-sponsor this bill and make sure that it passes through the Senate very quickly. That's a very simple message.
What are the prospects as you see them now? You mentioned this new legislature, a lot of churning up of the personnel in the Senate and in the House. We have new faces. We have a new governor. What are the prospects for passage, and what kind of opposition is it encountering so far as it's been presented? is it in committee now? Is that
It is. It's currently in the Environment Committee, and you know, there was a great public hearing last Monday. There were people that turned out all the way from Greenwich to come up and personally testify. There were a local legislator who researched this extensively for a year and a half in Greenwich and passed the same language, helped pass it in Greenwich. She came up to testify. She's an environmental lawyer. There were other, you know, members of the public who have passed this in their town. We had two Catholic nuns step up and testify, and, you know, many other people submitted testimony online. We also had the Connecticut Sierra Club speaking for this, the Citizens Campaign for the Environment speaking for this, League of Conservation Voters submitted testimony, and so we have a lot of support, but the issue is building the political will for legislators to actually take action, and that requires voters, constituents, regular people to make this phone call. You know, you cannot rely on activists or advocates like myself to do this for you. We need a groundswell of people making a phone call to their senator starting on Monday and saying, I don't want this waste coming into my state, and, you know, do your job to protect us and keep it out of our community. And then the opposition, unfortunately, there is an organization called the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. And there's rather a curious thing happening with them. They say they speak for all 168 of 169 towns that actually pay to be part of their organization. But they are actively calling to kill or preempt or nullify all the local laws that have already been passed over the past 3 years in towns and cities, including Bridgeport's local law. 56 towns and cities across Connecticut have already passed a local law, and for some reason, they say they speak for every town, but they want to basically come in and tread all over the democratic process and the activity that local legislators have made. Now, we don't know exactly who is behind this campaign at CCM. I spoke to an ex-president of CCM just a couple days ago, and she was completely surprised to hear that they have submitted testimony and are making appointments with legislators, asking to sit down with them along with construction industry lobbyists and complain about this bill and say why it shouldn't pass. But there are other board members of CCM who did everything they could to try to sabotage this from passing in their town. And, you know, quite frankly, in one particular town, citizens ended up collecting hundreds of petition signatures and forced it to go to a special town meeting. And then they voted, you know, I think the vote was like 126 to 9 people voted to pass this in that town. You know, other towns have done petition initiatives. We've seen in Clinton, they had 250 people show up at a special town meeting, and they voted unanimously to send this to referendum. And then when it went to referendum, where people had to come in and cast a ballot, you know, in the auditorium one day, 496 to 19 was the vote to pass this. So, you know, there is just overwhelming support, and you don't have to be a Democrat, you don't have to be a Republican, you don't have to be liberal, you don't have to be conservative. People, no matter what your viewpoint is, they understand that this waste is highly toxic. They understand that it's contaminating other towns outside of the state. And they understand that once you mix it into construction fill or turn it into de-icer, it can go legally anywhere unless you have a ban for it. So that's what we want to bring about in the statewide level. And, you know, we're not going to let CCM bullies push us around and say, we're going to take away your town bans. We're going to fight, and we're going to fight very deliberately and very strongly. strongly, and we're asking citizens in the 56 towns to stand up and fight for their rights as well. And, you know, the other towns where you have not yet passed this in your town, this is your opportunity to get the same protection that one-third of the other state currently has.
What are some of the claims that you deem to be inaccurate that are being made by the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities and some commercial interests, I guess, the Connecticut Petroleum Council, about SB 753?
Well, you know, it's interesting because one particular person who is a resident of Greenwich has been talking to both CCM and the Connecticut petroleum industry. And so we're seeing kind of some of the same arguments being made. Doesn't mean they're accurate, but we're seeing the same arguments being made. So there's kind of this appearance that people are kind of working together, the construction industry lobbyists and the petroleum industry lobbyists and potentially people involved with CCM. And, you know, one of the things that CCM has done is provide absolutely inaccurate information to all their member towns. They were seeing all these really good protective ordinances pass over the past couple of years. And last summer, they came out with their own version of an ordinance. And unfortunately, it also had loopholes. It only banned waste from hydraulic fracturing, this time from oil and gas wells. But it didn't cover any of the other loopholes that we've been talking about. And staff members at CCM and I have talked with each other extensively. Board members at CCM and I have talked to each other extensively. We have explained all the problems. And for some reason, when they developed their own ordinance, they decided to write specific exemptions in it that will allow waste to be used for road and driveway resurfacing or construction or manufacturing processes. They specifically wrote in exemptions that the drilling and extraction industry would like to see people, you know, using this waste for, because it gives them an opportunity to unload it onto unsuspecting, uneducated contractors and uneducated communities as well. And when they released this, you know, I'm going to read a quote here. They told all their member towns that towns, many of the towns that have passed these local bans have been, quote, paralyzed from performing any infrastructure or road projects, effectively chilling the economic development environment for many communities. We have not found any evidence that this is true. In fact, this year we went to numerous communities and asked them, are you having any problems? How many bids have you, you know, put forward? Stamford alone has, you know, gone through 63 bid and contract processes since they passed their ordinance. About 7 months ago. And they haven't had any issues whatsoever. So now CCM is telling legislators that if you pass this comprehensive bill, you know, you're going to impact negatively projects that are currently going on the state. They need to come clean. They need to specifically tell legislators what contractors in the state are currently bringing in fracking waste in their fill or in their brownfield remediation materials, because if they are, they need to be stopped immediately, and that's another reason why we need State Bill 753 to pass as soon as possible.
Okay, Jennifer, we have flat run out of time. Well, let's give those phone numbers one more time. So to call Republican senators, state senators, the number is 1-800-842-1421. And for Democratic senators, it would be 800-842-1420. And we're going to post this information in the podcast that we will issue from this program, this interview. I want to thank Jennifer Siskind, Connecticut Coordinator for Food and Water Watch, and one of Connecticut's own special and inexhaustible natural resources. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Rich. You have a great rest of your evening.
You too. Take care.
Take care.
And this is Mike Check coming down to our last 30 seconds with you. Thank you for listening. WPKN's Mic Check comes to you every Sunday at 5:30, just before the Ralph Nader Radio Hour, which will start in a moment.